are you, Doctor?
Hey, Pat, how are you?
Oh, I'm just
Happy
fine.
Happy Valentine's Day.
Oh, thank you. Same to you. Okay, now this is absolutely near and dear to my heart. It's a wonderful thing because we know that women don't have the same symptoms. They're not even treated the same by their physicians. So, do you think many women are aware of that or not? Maybe more so now, but in general, no.
I think women are becoming more aware. I think that traditionally medicine has been a very male-dominated specialty. And I think that women were often blown off. A woman will come in with very different symptoms than a man will. I mean, the classical thing that we're taught is that a man will come in and will take his fist and put it to the middle of his chest, and it's called the Levine sign, sign, and say, "Doctor, I was taking the garbage out. It was cold like it is now, and I felt like an elephant was on my chest, and it went to my left arm and my jaw, and I became sweaty and short of breath. Doctor, what do you think it is?" Well, those are symptoms of a heart attack or at least unstable angina. But a woman's very different. Women often don't complain of that. A woman will tell you, "Doctor, I'm very fatigued. I'm short of breath. I have jaw pain. I had back pain." But they may never actually get chest pain. But all those other symptoms may be symptoms of coronary insufficiency or actually a heart attack.
Go ahead.
I'm sorry?
I have someone's going to change the headset maybe for me. I have a kind of a hollow sound when I'm listening to you. But anyway, now, how about age and weight? Are they factors?
Well, it's interesting that women will develop heart disease 10 years after a typical man will develop it.
Yeah.
So I think, once again, not only does the doctor need to know that, but the woman needs to think about it. If they're not feeling well, if they're excessively tired, short of breath, they can't do as much, they need to see their physician and mention that and also say to the doctor, do you think it could be my heart? And I can't tell you, there have been women who have come in for their routine checkups, they all have risk factors, high blood pressure, high cholesterol, all of which were controlled. And as part of my routine, I'll always ask, do you find that when you exert yourself that you're becoming more short of breath? Doctor, now that you mention it, yes. I said, well, we need to look into that. And some of these women have gone on to need bypass surgery, but it saved their life and it saved them from a heart attack.
That's exactly true. I know people like that, too. But the age factor is something. But how about family history?
Well, family history is critical. There are certain genetic factors for high cholesterol that may run in families. And if people particularly have heart disease at a young age, young being under 65. Mm-hmm. So if somebody's mother had a heart attack in their 30s or 40s, 50s, the father, then you need to be very aware of that patient. You need to make sure that all the risk factors that you can modify are modified.
Well, you know, you mentioned that. What about the father? What if if you have daughters and the father had heart disease at a young age, do the daughters have to be concerned about that as the sons? Because they're not genetically like them.
Numbers don't usually lie.
Yeah.
When one in three women die of either a heart attack or stroke, and one in four women definitely die from heart disease, I think that's a red flag. One of the things we do in my practice is that when I spend an hour and a half with people, I update their family history every year because it changes.
Mm-hmm.
And somebody, and it goes both ways. It's not necessarily the person's parent, but it could be their child. In one case, I had a man who had two sons who ended up with bypass surgery. And I said to the patient, you have enough risk factors, diabetes, high blood pressure, high cholesterol.
Mm-hmm.
I think we need to look farther. And he really didn't have much in the way of symptoms, and yet we were able to uncover heart disease in him.
Mm-hmm.
That was, of course, a man. But sometimes it's true in women as well. I think you just need to be, women need to be aware. I think women need to go for checkups, not when they're sick, when they're healthy.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that'll be a topic for our next week, talking about studies coming out, it was in the Wall Street Journal, against annual physicals, which I think doctors should be up in arms about.
What was that? Oh, you want to talk about that next week?
Yeah, anyway, we'll go into that next week.
Oh, I can't wait. Excuse me. Well, that was interesting about the heredity. I do think that you see that in families. But let me ask you this. What about high blood pressure? If high blood pressure is controlled, is that considered that you have heart disease if you have high blood pressure?
Well, you know, it's interesting. When you interview a patient, mm-hmm. and I'll say to someone, do you have high blood pressure? And they'll say no. And I'll say, well, why are you on these two medicines? And they'll say, oh, well, you know, that's what I take to keep it under control. So the perception of the patient may be, no, I don't have hypertension. It's under control. Right now it's normal. Mm-hmm. But it's normal because they're on medications.
Yes.
So where science is now is studying things called vascular biology or endothelial function of the arteries and veins, mm-hmm. mostly the arteries. What it means in English, we used to think that the arteries were pipes and it just carried blood and nutrients and things could go wrong, but we didn't know that they actually run chemical reactions. And so where science has taken us is to try and to protect the lining of the blood vessels. So what happens is, if your pressure is high, that puts force against the lining of the blood vessel, mm-hmm. and it creates little breaks. And the way the body heals the break is it takes pieces of bad cholesterol floating in the circulation, mm-hmm. and it takes white blood cells and it creates something called plaque.
Mm-hmm.
And plaque is basically like an internal Band-Aid, and it's protective. But if that plaque builds up from repeated injury to the blood vessel, and then it either occludes the vessel, you have a stroke or heart attack, mm-hmm. or if it breaks, then you could have sudden death or a stroke or heart attack. So where we go with what's called primary prevention, which is working with people to reduce their risk factors, which would be smoking, which is the most easily preventable,
mm-hmm.
You know, to their diet, to weight reduction, to physical exercise, control of blood sugar. Those are all things that independently damage the walls of our arteries, lead to plaque buildup, and that leads to heart attack and death.
Yikes. As I said, yikes. Now, what are... if you have hypertension, you're in the heart disease category. Is that correct?
Well, not necessarily. Heart disease means that there has been some perturbation of the heart. And when I say that, that means either... One common misnomer is sometimes people have to chest discomfort and have a cardiac catheterization and yet not require an angioplasty or stent.
Right.
And they'll walk out and say, well, I'm fine. And what I'll explain to them is they may have something called non-obstructive coronary disease, meaning that they've already developed plaque buildup. Well, that plaque, even though it's only 20 or 30% narrowing an artery, may not need to be fixed. It may not even give them any symptoms. But if that plaque becomes unstable and ruptures, that's a heart attack or sudden death. So that patient actually does have coronary disease. There are people that have valvular heart disease where, well, you may have heard women who have mitral valve prolapse, mm-hmm. which is usually benign, but the valve can degenerate and more blood can be going backwards into the, what's called the left atrium of the heart,
mm-hmm.
And that creates a problem. There's something called the broken heart syndrome. And what that means in English, there's different names for it, things like apical ballooning syndrome and Takayosis disease. But in English, they found out that severe emotional stress can actually weaken the heart muscle. Now, fortunately, in many cases, it's reversible. But that seems to happen more in women than men.
How is that reversible? How do you reverse that?
Well, what you do is you use medications. You use things called medicines called ACE inhibitors or angiotensin receptor mm-hmm. blockers, which then lower blood pressure, and it makes it easier for the heart to pump blood. So the heart, being a muscle, doesn't have to work as hard, and the heart can heal. Often water pills or diuretics are used to get so that there's less fluid that the heart has to pump.
Mm-hmm. Speaking of that, is it important for everyone to drink water?
Well, absolutely. Yeah, there was a study done at Harvard a number of years ago. Mm-hmm. It was a rather large study. And what they looked at was water consumption, and he found out that people that drink 6 to 8 glasses a day of water were, and this was in men, although I think the same would be true if it were studied in women, are maybe about a third less likely to suffer with a heart attack. We're not sure why, but...
you know what I'm doing now? I'm taking a swig of water.
Good. You're better than I'm drinking coffee.
Well, you know what?
Water in the coffee.
That is true. I mean, I know people that drink a lot of water, and I'm one. I don't really like water. I don't like it. Does anything else count as a fluid? I mean, I force myself to drink it. When I come in here, I get water and I drink it. But what if you have tea? Is that the same as drinking water or no?
Well, not exactly. I mean, remember, if you drink tea or coffee, there's caffeine in there. And look, there's a number of studies that show that that coffee drinking may be protective, believe it or not, for stroke, men that drink 6 cups of coffee a day have a lower likely of getting prostate cancer.
Really?
So there may be something beneficial, but it's not exactly the same. You have to remember something. 2/3 of our body is water. Water is in all of our cells.
Mm-hmm.
So it's really important to drink water and to stay hydrated.
Oh, okay. all right, now, let's see. Then a warning sign, that you have I have a note here about Rosie O'Donnell. What happened to her? What do you think about taking aspirin, like the low dose, the 81 milligrams or whatever it is? What about that?
You know, traditionally, doctors look at risk factors. And so somebody comes in, and maybe they're 55 or 60, and maybe their mother or father had a heart attack or an angina at maybe the same age, and they have high blood pressure and high cholesterol. What you do is you look at the number of risk factors, and if that person's really at risk, then you would use an 81 milligram aspirin for what's called primary prevention.
Mm-hmm.
That's before something happens.
Mm-hmm.
If somebody's already had an event, a heart attack, a stroke, or angina, then they would absolutely go on aspirin because it's been found to significantly reduce the risk of that coming again. That would be called secondary prevention.
Mm-hmm. Now, what about Rosie O'Donnell had mentioned before that she took aspirin, and she was having a heart attack, I believe, and so she took aspirin at that time, and she thinks it saved her life. If someone thinks they're having a heart attack, chest discomfort or something, should they take an aspirin, not a baby aspirin, a big one?
Yes. I mean, if Rescue Squad were to come, they would have you chew a couple baby aspirin. See, what it does is it... when this plaque is rupturing and there's circulation's not getting to parts of the heart, the aspirin is a blood thinner, and it will hopefully stop that clot from forming.
Oh, that's good. Good, good, good. Okay, now, chocolate, the ever-popular chocolate, is that good to help us fight heart disease?
You know, it's very interesting.
Makes you fat.
Here's the long and short of it. There are studies published in major cardiology journals called Circulation. And what they found out from chocolate is that cocoa contains a chemical called a flavonoid.
Right.
And what this flavonoid does, it's an antioxidant. Mm-hmm. And it lowers blood pressure in both the systolic, the top number, and the bottom number. It creates something called nitric oxide, which then dilates arteries, which lowers blood pressure. And it stops these platelets from sticking together, which prevents heart attacks. So what they found is in women, it actually prevents heart failure. But this is, the most effective dose of chocolate was about 1 to 3 servings a week. When people eat chocolate every day, they lose the protective effect of it. So you can get too much of a good thing.
Right. What about drinking hot chocolate, that type of thing? Or do you have to have a piece of Godiva chocolate?
As long as you have chocolate that has the cocoa in it, and the cocoa contains a chemical called flavonoids.
Yeah, right. That's interesting. All right, now I did want to ask another question. We're sort of winding down here, but I wanted to ask you what the difference was in tachycardia and atrial fibrillation.
Excellent question.
Mm-hmm.
The normal human heart beats between 60 to 100 times a minute.
Mm-hmm.
If the heart beats over that, over 100, it's by definition a tachycardia.
Mm-hmm.
Things that can cause a tachycardia are fever, exercise can do that, that's physiologic.
Mm-hmm.
Stress can do it, infection can do it. So there's a number of things that can do it. Atrial fibrillation refers to an abnormal electrical impulse that arrives from the upper chamber of the heart, called the atrium. And instead of the heart's own pacemaker sending out a beat every so many fractions of a second, it becomes irregular. So the heartbeat originates from electrical areas around the heart's own pacemaker. And this doesn't mean a person that has a mechanical pacemaker. All of us have our own pacemaker in our heart that's natural. And what happens is that can make the heart beat very quickly because those impulses are conducted very quickly.
Mm-hmm.
And then a person will come in with shortness of breath, fatigue, tiredness. And when you examine them, you can hear this. It has a characteristic sound. It's irregular. Normal heartbeat, when someone comes on, you hear boom, 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 boom.
Mm-hmm.
And this will be different. It'll be boom, 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 blah, 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 blah. And I actually was teaching a student the other day, and I must have had him listen to 10 normal heartbeats of patients just to hear the cadence and the rhythm. And then we have teaching things on the walls for the patients, you know, as well as students, to show where the electrical impulses come from. And then when the people that had atrial fibrillation, the student was able to listen and immediately tell the difference. But a person who's worried that their heart's beating too quickly can take their own pulse and sort of then call the doctor and say, look, my heart's beating too quickly and it's irregular. And that could be potentially serious because it can lead to a stroke.
Oh, really? Just a regular tachycardia could lead to a stroke?
Not a regular, it's called the sinus tachycardia. It's just a rapid heartbeat. That's different, but if it's an irregular rhythm, it may be something called atrial fibrillation.
Oh.
And that, if untreated, can lead to a stroke.
Now, again, we get back to the women as we wind down here with Dr. Rabinowitz. Do women ignore a lot of that, those things?
You know, Pat, I'm not so sure about that. Women statistically make many more visits to a physician than men do. And I think doctors have done a better job at recognizing that illnesses present differently in women than they do in men. I think women are tougher than men. I think women, and this isn't to be denigrated to people of my, my gender, but I think that women can take a lot. I think women, at an early age because of menstruation, get used to having pain once a month.
That's exactly right.
They put up with childbirth. And a woman is the captain of the ship. A woman runs the household in most cases. And she can't be sick. A woman still has to take care of the house. I mean, a lot of these responsibilities still culturally fall upon women, and therefore, if things are bothering them, they may tend not to pay as much attention to it.
Oh, that is true. That is definitely true. All right, well, that's good. Now, let's talk a little bit about your practice. People can call you. You're offering a free 30-minute consultation. Is that correct?
Well, what we do is different. Yeah. We offer preventative services.
Yeah.
Now, people will tell you, well, doctor, that's covered under the Affordable Care Act. Well, what that does, that allows a patient to come to any physician, and a doctor can do their examination and tell the patient, diet, exercise, lose weight, get a colonoscopy, mammography, bone density, see the gynecologist, and they can click a box on the computer, and then they can bill a code that they told the patient to do that. What we do is we actually bring people in throughout the year, once for usually an hour and a half to 2 hours, with a very exhaustive history, which is anything they're complaining about. And then we give everyone a mental status examination to make sure that there's a, their baseline mental status is okay. You would be surprised how often people at young ages begin to suffer with memory loss. Depression analysis. People often walk around and not sure why they don't feel well, whether they're depressed, but nobody ever asked them. People have sleep apnea, where they're, falling asleep behind the wheel of the car, but nobody ever bothered to check. We exhaust the family histories. I can't tell you how many times people have come in and were existing patients. I said, well, what happened to your sister Mary? Oh, doctor, I forgot to tell you. She came down with colon cancer. And I said, well, now that changes the playing field for you. You need to go get a colonoscopy. Lo and behold, my patient had a colon cancer. So, and then, to tell a patient diet, exercise, lose weight is very nice. People don't do it, and they need to be brought back because so much of what we deal with is habit changes. And so that's where we're different than a traditional practice. We keep bringing people back to focus on things that can be fixed and working with them on it. And as a result, they usually have a longer, happier, and healthier life.
Well, that's terrific. Thank you so much, Doctor. Now, we can call 215-PREVENT or online 215prevent.com. Dr. Mark Rabinowitz, thank you so much.
I appreciate it.
Thank you so much, and have a happy Valentine's Day.
Thank you, same to you.
Thank you, bye.